Welcome to the Practical Employment Law Podcast, a podcast covering all aspects of American employment law. I'm your host, Mark Chumley. Today, I'm going to talk about what I consider to be an evergreen issue in the world of employment law, the office romance. That's right, I'm talking about mixing business with pleasure, the professional affair, or, if you prefer, fishing off the company pier. I've been practicing employment law for over 25 years, and I can say with every confidence that I've had this issue come up multiple times in every year I've been in practice. According to a recent Forbes article I saw, statistics show that over 60% of adults have had a workplace romance. I don't know about that number, but I do think that the issue is always going to be with us, if only because Americans work a lot of hours, and in many cases, it's just a matter of familiarity or convenience. Regardless, I'm going to give you 5 points for employers to think about when it comes to office romances. So let's jump right in. Point number one, a consensual office romance is not illegal. Now, I'm not saying it's a good idea, or that you cannot have policies prohibiting or curtailing office relationships. I'll touch on that later. But standing alone, there is nothing illegal about a consensual relationship in the workplace. The operative word is consensual. Obviously, Title VII and state laws prohibit sexual harassment, which includes a hostile work environment or quid pro quo harassment. The former refers to a situation where the workplace is permeated with offensive language or conduct that creates a hostile environment for an employee, and the latter refers to a scenario where expressed or implied demands for sexual favors are made in exchange for some benefit, like a promotion or a pay increase, or to avoid some detriment, like termination. These are both illegal, and they are never consensual. By contrast, if two employees start a relationship and it is mutually consensual, it's not a violation of the law. Of course, the problem is that the relationship may be consensual, and then it's not. And many sexual harassment claims arise from the scenario where one of the employees ends or attempts to end the relationship, and the other is unwilling to let it go or unhappy about the decision and somehow retaliates. So you can easily see how this scenario might lead to a sexual harassment claim of either or both varieties. Point number two, workplace relationships often lead to other issues. So many issues. Obviously, if someone is in a relationship with a coworker, they may favor that person over other employees. This is especially problematic when one of the participants in the relationship is in a management role and in a position to play favorites. I've seen many claims come out of this scenario. Usually, an employee who feels they're being treated less favorably will complain that the manager is playing favorites by making the complaining employee do less desirable tasks, giving them inferior opportunities, and otherwise treating their romantic partner more favorably than other employees. Frankly, these claims don't usually go anywhere because, as noted, the consensual relationship is not illegal, and playing favorites, as long as it's not based on a protected classification, is not necessarily illegal either. But it's obviously bad for morale, raises ethical issues, and may violate employment policies, and it just looks bad in general. Also, as I'm sure my friends in HR will attest, it really creates a lot of headaches for them. And there have been cases where romantic favoritism can lead to discrimination claims. I can recall a case I handled that involved an office Lothario who had a string of workplace romances, always consensual, and he always played favorites. The problem was he had a type. That is, he only pursued female coworkers of a certain race and age, and as a result, other employees raised claims. Now, this situation was ultimately addressed by the employer, and I'm not sure those claims would have gone anywhere, but it is an issue that might come up. Another issue that I've seen frequently is a scenario where one of the participants, or sometimes both, are married to other people. A spouse complains to the employer about the situation, and the employer is placed in a tough situation. A related scenario in a case I handled recently involved an office affair where the male manager decided to patch things up with his wife. One of her conditions for not divorcing him was that he fire his romantic partner, who was a subordinate. As with most of these messy workplace romance cases, a settlement was ultimately negotiated. The point of all these examples is simply that this scenario, the workplace romance, creates very difficult fact patterns, usually with more than a little embarrassing evidence. Just think about the text messages generated by an office romance. I've seen them many times, and it's not pretty. What this all means for employers is the simple fact that from an employment law standpoint, office romances are bad news. Point number three, employers may ban or curtail workplace relationships. Many employers do have policies that ban workplace relationships or limit them in some way. An outright ban is difficult to enforce, and the more common approach now is to limit such relationships. I should mention here that there are some states that have privacy laws or laws against employers curtailing otherwise legal conduct that might limit the scope of an employer's authority in this area. But most jurisdictions allow employers some leeway, particularly where there could be a conflict of interest caused by a relationship. When it comes to these types of policies, the most common approach for employers is to prohibit relationships within the same group or division, or to prohibit relationships between employees who report to one another, either directly or indirectly. Many policies also require disclosure of relationships. You may recall that the head of CNN resigned not too long ago after it came out that he failed to disclose a relationship with a subordinate in violation of company policy. These types of policies can be effective, but as I always say when it comes to policies in general, do not enact a policy that you are unable or unwilling to enforce consistently. If the vice president of sales starts a relationship with a low-level sales employee in the same reporting structure and that violates the company policy, you have two employees who have violated the policy and you need to deal with them both consistently to avoid creating claims. It sounds fine on paper, but when it happens, I often see employers making some serious logical contortions to avoid an outcome that might harm the bottom line. Point number four, policies are important. I'm not just talking about policies related to workplace relationships, although those are important. At the end of the day, most workplace romance issues touch on several policies, most notably harassment and reporting policies. So it's important to have appropriate anti-harassment policies and policies setting forth the ways in which harassment can be reported. If and when a consensual relationship goes south, the participants should have clear guidelines on what the employer prohibits and what to do about complaints. Additional policies that are often implicated in workplace romance scenarios include policies related to ethics, expense reimbursement, travel, hiring and promotion, discipline, and probably several others. The ones I mentioned, though, are the ones I've seen come up most frequently. So the issue with ethics typically comes up related to favoritism issues, as does hiring and promotion. Expense reimbursement and travel policies also come up frequently because some employees who are in a relationship, particularly the ones cheating on their spouses, use work trips and events as excuses to get together and may even manufacture trips and other expenses that are not strictly necessary just for personal reasons. The discipline policy comes into play when someone crosses the line. I should also add that having a policy or process related to investigations of complaints is important as well. Many employers tend to be uncomfortable addressing what could be characterized as a personal matter, but when it happens at work, it needs to be handled like any other complaint. Point number five, love contracts and breakup plans. These are more recent developments in the employment law world. A so-called love contract is an agreement, often drafted by the employer after disclosure of a relationship, that memorializes key facts, such as the consensual nature of the relationship, what steps the employees need to take if the relationship turns sour or if there's any conduct that violates company policy, and what happens if the relationship ends. Breakup agreements are usually entered into by the participants of the relationship, and as the name implies, the agreement establishes what will happen if a breakup occurs, sort of a workplace prenup. One example might be that one of the participants agrees that if the relationship ends, they'll seek a transfer or leave the company within some time frame. How romantic. Love contracts were pretty trendy 10 or 15 years ago, but I don't see them so much anymore. The problem with these types of agreements is that they don't really accomplish all that much. At most, they usually establish that at a certain point in time, the relationship was definitely consensual. However, if there's a power imbalance in the workplace relationship, the person with less power often claims that they were either coerced into the agreement in the first place or somehow had their rights violated or curtailed by threats or other actions. In the end, any workplace romance is a minefield from an employment law perspective. If you're thinking about taking the plunge, all I can say is why don't you save us all some embarrassment and try one of those cringy dating apps instead.
This has been the Practical Employment Law Podcast. Thanks for listening. Please watch for future episodes wherever you get podcasts. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review. If you would like to contact me about any aspect of the podcast, my email address is mchumley@kmklaw.com, and my full contact information is in the show notes. This podcast was created for general informational purposes only and does not constitute legal advice or a solicitation to provide legal services. Although we attempt to ensure that the podcast is complete, accurate, and up to date, we assume no responsibility for its completeness, accuracy, or timeliness. The information in this podcast is not intended to create, and listening to it does not constitute an attorney-client relationship. Listeners should not act upon this information without seeking professional legal counsel.